Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. First, we'll go to New York and get an update on the superstorm making landfall on the northeast coast right now. Phil Aranonu, the U.S. campaign director and co-founder of 350.org, joins us. On Sunday, he, Bill McKibben, and other activists unfurled a giant banner, End Climate Silence, in Times Square. Also joining us is Joseph Nevins, who teaches geography at Vassar College. He has an article at Al Jazeera, Ecological Crisis and the Need to Challenge the 20%. Then we will speak with the Nation Institute's investigative reporter, Lee Fong, about the dark money fueling the Romney campaign and their massive phone banks targeting the swing states that could overcome the supposed advantage that the Obama campaign has in terms of their ground game in Ohio and other critical states. We will look into the hidden role of the oligarchs and corporations who do not have to reveal the extent or the means with which they are supporting the Romney campaign. Then finally, we'll speak about California's Proposition 34 that will ban the death penalty and, if passed, very likely have considerable national implications for ending capital punishment. We will speak with Bruce Liska, who at the age of 17 was wrongfully convicted of murdering his mother. Bruce spent 26 years in prison for a crime he did not commit and barely avoided the death penalty. Thanks to investigative journalism by the Los Angeles Times, he was exonerated and is now suing the LAPD. Joining us now is Phil Aranonu, an environmental activist and co-founder and U.S. campaign director of 350.org. On Sunday, activists with 350.org unfurled a giant End Climate Silence banner in Times Square. And also joining us is Joseph Nevins, a professor of geography at Vassar College. He has an article at Al Jazeera, Ecological Crisis and the Need to Challenge the 20%. Welcome to Background Briefing, Phil Aranonu and Joseph Nevins.
Thank you, Ian.
And Phil, are you there?
Yep.
Good. So let me begin with you, Phil. Tell me about what you did yesterday in Times Square.
Yeah, absolutely. Just before the subways closed down in New York City, we went down to Times Square, which was eerily empty, and we met a number of climate activists, folks from Occupy Wall Street and a number of other groups to send a message to our political leaders that we want them to talk about climate change as if it's real, because it is real.
So, Joseph Nevins, what do you see outside of your window? You're also in New York on the Hudson River. I take it that the storm is pretty much making landfall now on the New Jersey coast, right?
That's correct. Actually, I can't see much because all the streetlights are out.
I see. Right.
Well, while I have electricity in the house, I'm not sure that's going to last very long.
Well, let's hang in there, hopefully. Tell me, though, given what's going on here, in watching this campaign, both presidential campaign candidates have been pretty silent on climate change. The president did speak about it on MTV. But while the candidates are not speaking about climate change, it would seem that climate change is speaking to them.
Absolutely. I mean, they can ignore it all they want, but they're going to have to face the consequences in all sorts of ways. I mean, it's very striking looking at not only listening to the debates, but looking at the campaign websites of the two candidates. And on neither one of them do they talk about environmental issues. The closest the Obama campaign comes to that is talking about energy uses, energy matters. And at the top of the list is the Obama campaign's commitment to make sure that we have low gas prices, gasoline prices at the pump, so we can continue drive with abandon. And then toward the bottom, he begins to talk about green energy, but nothing about conservation or the need to sort of scale back our rapacious consumption, on a collective level, nor of particular institutions like, say, the U.S. military, which by itself is the largest producer of greenhouse gas emissions on an institutional level.
And, of course, the Republicans in Congress have tried to stop the U.S. Navy from using alternative fuels for their fleet. Phil Aranonu, the Travelers Insurance have released a pamphlet with data compiled by the German reinsurance giant Munich Re. which basically is a 300-page report called Severe Weather in North America. This is a compiled evidence from 1980 to 2011, suggesting the overall losses from weather catastrophes have been over $1 trillion in 2011 dollars, including $500 billion in insured losses. And Hurricane Katrina itself accounted for some $125 billion in losses, and roughly 30,000 people lost their lives due to weather catastrophes in North America in the 30 years examined by the report. So if the insurance people are starting to wake up, is that in fact about the only wedge that we can see out there? You got the oil companies funding denial. Maybe the insurance companies are going to start funding reality.
Yeah, it's not surprising that Chevron just made a huge donation to the Romney campaign, about $2.5 million just a couple days ago, to ensure that that their candidate gets elected. I think we're in a really big fight with the fossil fuel industry. Like the tobacco industry, they're an industry based on killing people. The product that they produce is carbon fuel, and that carbon goes into the atmosphere and warms the earth. And we're seeing the results now. But there has to be a wake-up call at some point. The politicians really have to understand that they can't keep silent on this issue and that they really need to deal with it. And hiding behind energy and hiding behind other issues, they have to take responsibility for what's a real issue that they're going to have to deal with. I think what Sandy is showing us is that it's not an issue just for our kids or the future, which is the line that Obama used in his MTV interview, but that it's an issue for now, that people are really suffering now.
And again, Joseph Nevins, professor of geography at Vassar College. You have an article at Al Jazeera, Ecological Crisis and the Need to Challenge the 20%. The point of your article, of course, is that here in the United States, with one-fifth of the world's population, we consume, 20% of the energy? And until we and the rest of the industrial nations understand the extent to which we're both burning energy at a profligate rate and, in effect, encouraging others to do so, it's a bit like the arms race, isn't it, where the nations with the most nuclear weapons, the Russia and the United States, in order to stop proliferation, they've got to start reducing their arsenals. Is that an argument you're making?
I mean, in many ways, yes. I mean, and at the same time, I concur with Phil saying in that we really have to focus on a lot of these large institutional actors whose survival and so-called success depends on, necessitates rapacious consumptions of fossil fuels. At the same time, I think we have to avoid making a distinction between sort of a simple distinction between sort of an us and them, because their very existence is predicated on our cooperation, our buying in to what they need. In other words, we're the ones that are ultimately, as individuals, as a society, consuming large amounts of fossil fuels. And so in that regard, we have to question our very way of life. In the case of the United States, we're a little less than 5% of the world's population, but we use about 25% of all carbon-based fuels. And in the article that I wrote for Al Jazeera, what I'm pointing out is that it's that 20% on a global level, which includes the United States, Western Europe, Japan, and elites in a small number of other countries that are responsible, contemporarily, for about 80%, 20% of the world's population responsible for about 80% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions. And if we look at it historically, that 20%, that one-fifth slice, is responsible for even a larger portion than 80%. And of course, what we're seeing in terms of the climate front is just one component, albeit a very important and alarming one, in a generalized ecological crisis. I mean, we face crises on numerous fronts: deforestation, the demise of the coral reefs, the overfishing of most of the world's fisheries, ocean acidification, toxic waters, toxic soils. According to the FAO, about one quarter of the world's, the FAO is the Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations, but one quarter of the world's soils are severely degraded or in the process of being severely degraded. And this is, again, it's tied into our very way of organizing our society on a global level, and a way of organizing society that's driven largely by a very small percentage of the world's population. So we have to think of our consumption and be critical of it in the same way we'd be critical of our acts to the extent they fuel racism or empire or classism, right? Because who gets what ecologically, who calls the shots, is similarly based on a structure of injustice.
And Phil Aranonu, who's an environmental activist and the co-founder and U.S. campaigns director for 350.org, how do we, given, of course, that this campaign has been have avoided any discussions about the obvious connection between global warming and the weather that now is striking the northeast coast of the United States in what the mayor of New York has called the storm of the century? It's just making landfall now. And we're both grateful that both of you still have lights on and electricity and your phones are working. The Romney campaign, of course, are talking about the need for energy and jobs and North American independence. So none of the debate is anything like where it should be, according to what Joseph Nevins just told us. I know you're trying to do. You're trying to remedy that with 350.org. Is it Pavlovian? Do we have to suffer a lot in order to wake up? What's your answer there?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think the initial discussion around climate change a few years ago was a lot more about driving less and changing our lifestyles, and I think those are definitely important starting places. But look, if we all switch our light bulbs and decide to drive Priuses instead of Hummers, the numbers just don't add up. We won't get to 350 parts per million in time. What really needs to happen is we really need to take on the fossil fuel industry straight on. The reason we haven't had climate legislation in this country or an international deal is because these fossil fuel companies, Shell, Exxon, Chevron, these companies have spent billions of dollars selling misinformation for 20 years, saying that the climate crisis isn't real. It's wrong. We need to take a moral stand, and that's the fight that we're. It's really a fight to the death. It's either we win this or there's no planet left, and that's why we're launching a new campaign right after the election called "Do the Math." We're taking Bill McKibben, another one of our founders, an environmental author, on a 20-city tour around the United States to send this message to folks that this is a movement, that we have an opportunity to stand up and fight for what's right and fight for clean energy and what needs to happen and make sure that these fossil fuel companies get the message. And you can check that out at math@350.org.
And Joseph Nevins, just in closing in the last minute, what do you think it's going to take for us to change? Because you're talking about a cultural change, a psychological change, as well as a political one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think these what Phil and I are talking about are mutually exclusive. And what I would say is that they're necessarily linked. I mean, obviously, if I stay at home and do nothing, that in itself isn't going to change anything. Right, so of course we need to be, Derek Jensen wrote an article a number of years ago called "Forget About Shorter Showers." He's saying if you think, by reducing your shower time that you're going to change, help save the planet, forget about it. Obviously, we need to act on an institutional and collective level first and foremost. At the same time, I just know too many, climate scientists, climate activists, environmental justice activists who don't think twice about living a high consumptive lifestyle, right? They fly everywhere. One flight round trip between New York and Los Angeles is the equivalent of 2 metric tons of greenhouse gases, the equivalent of what a typical Brazilian uses in a year. I mean, it's sort of the equivalent of saying, I'm against institutional racism, but I don't care about my own racist practices. We need to put these two things in dialogue, and rather than seeing them as mutually exclusive, figure out how we socialize, we move from individual change up to institutional change, and the reverse, how institutional change is going to be linked to individual change. But we have to call into question our individual lifestyles and to be critical of it. And I think one reason elements of the environmental movement are afraid to do that is because they're afraid they're going to lose people, right? And I think the message that we all too often send is that if we just get the technologies right, if we move to clean energy, green energy, we can have our cake and eat it too. And again, it's not just a climate crisis. It's a crisis on many levels, and it's tied into our consumption. So yes, we need to act politically. We need to focus on institutions. We need to push our elected officials to do the right thing, which is, you know, radically change our energy consumption patterns and the modes of our energy. But at the same time, we have to challenge ourselves and those around us. And when we're talking, you know, to an audience like we're talking to, and people like who we are, we're the people that are the source of the problems. We have to challenge ourselves as well.
Well, I thank both of you for joining us here today. Phil Arononiou, who's the environmental activist, co-founder of, and U.S. campaigns director of 350.org, and Joseph Nevins, professor of geography at Vassar College. He has an article at Al Jazeera, Ecological Crisis and the Need to Challenge the 20%. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about Romney's hidden ground game.